Today's Faith and Finance Live is pre-recorded, so our phone lines are not open.
New data shows that it still pays to get a college degree, depending on your major. Hi, I'm Rob West. While it's generally true that higher education pays off, it's by no means a guarantee. You've got to plan ahead to make sure your degree jumpstarts a successful career. I'll talk about that first today. Then we have some great questions lined up for you. But don't call in today because we're pre-recorded. This is Faith and Finance Live, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Okay, high school students have been told for decades that if you want a better paying job, go to college. And many young adults have done that, no doubt some with the belief that all college majors are created equal. They're not. Going to college is a financial decision, second only to buying a house. More specifically, it's an investment decision. Will it pay off? Well, perhaps the most important factor determining that is whether you graduate with a degree. Fail to do that, and any money you spend or borrow for college will likely be money down the drain in terms of future earnings. The good news is that data just released by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York shows that earning a college degree is still financially worthwhile, generally speaking. The data shows that recent college grads working full-time earn about $25,000 a year more than those with only a high school diploma. The catch is they have to be working. That means majors chosen by college grads must give them skills that managers are willing to pay for. Another study by the American Educational Research Journal shows that engineering and computer science degrees give the highest rate of return on dollars spent for education. They're followed by business, health, math, and science majors. So, for example, those with a bachelor degree in engineering can expect to start out at around $80,000 a year and significantly higher with a master's degree. The highest paid engineers working on aircraft, satellites, bridges, and other infrastructure can earn several hundred thousand dollars a year. One catch, though, you have to be really good at math. Meanwhile, computer systems managers make on average a bit over $140,000, but can earn significantly more than that depending on the level of complexity and responsibility with the job. The study also showed that education, humanities, and arts majors ranked the lowest in return on investment. Now, to be clear, we're not telling you to avoid those fields if that's where your passion lies. But college is expensive, and it's important to know the earning potential of any major you're considering, especially if you're borrowing to attend college. U.S. Census Bureau data shows a median salary of around $53,000 for degrees in family and consumer services and fine arts, and $55,000 for degrees in elementary education and social work. If that's where you're headed, you'll need to watch your expenses like a hawk and borrow as little as possible. Now, consider that according to the National Education Association, teachers with student loan debt owe an average of $56,000. We'll take that with a grain of salt because the NEA exists to advocate for higher teacher salaries, but if that figure is even close to accurate, it shows the difficulty many teachers have in paying back their student loans when they only make that much in a year. Remember, college is an investment, so always consider how long it will take to pay back your student loans on the salary you can expect to get with your major. Obviously, the less you borrow, the faster that will be. But also, the higher the salary, the faster you'll be able to get out of the red and into the black. Perhaps the ultimate example of that is the emergency room physician. That person will leave medical school with an average of $215,000 in student loan debt, according to the Education Data Initiative. Now, that sounds like an awful lot, and it is. But consider that the median salary of an emergency room physician is now $350,000 a year. A doctor will almost certainly pay off student loan debt before a teacher. But again, we're not telling you not to become a teacher or social worker if you feel that's God's calling on your life. Just do everything you can to minimize your student loan debt. That's good advice regardless of the major you choose. So take as many advanced placement classes as possible, get a part-time job in high school and college, and put your earnings toward tuition. But perhaps the most productive use of your time will be applying for scholarships. Set up a scholarship application assembly line online and apply for dozens of them. The greatest gift you can give yourself is to graduate from college with little or no debt. And before we take our first break, let me also remind you, there's a great wealth of resources waiting for you at faithfi.com. You'll find more about the FaithFi app, you'll find all of our great content, and you can jump into the FaithFi community. Again, it's all at faithfi.com. Stick around, much more to come just around the corner. Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance Live here on Moody Radio. By the way, our team is away from the studio. We're not here, so don't call in. But we did line up some great questions in advance. We will get to those questions in just a moment. But first, some emails. These come into us all the time at moodyradio.org/finance. By the way, if you have a question you'd like to send in, you can do that as well. moodyradio.org/finance. This one comes to us from Paula. She writes, is there a simple way to tell whether it's better to pay extra for a Medicare supplemental plan or should I choose a Medicare Advantage plan? The options are overwhelming. Let me try to simplify it a little bit, Paula. The two main choices are between what's called a Medigap plan and a Medicare Advantage plan. Now, a Medigap plan will probably cost more, but it covers more than a Medicare Advantage plan. So it really comes down to your health. I would say if you're in good health and make only routine visits to the doctor for checkups, a Medicare Advantage plan should work for you, and many of them are offered at no extra cost before what you're already paying for Medicare A and B. On the other hand, if you have pre-existing conditions that require a lot of doctor visits and treatments, and or you want to be able to choose your doctors. You don't want to be limited to just the network plans. That's where a Medigap plan might be the better option if you can fit it into your budget, because again, it will generally run you a bit more in the way of money. So hopefully that helps you decipher between those two. The next email says from Jonathan, I'm semi-retired, drawing Social Security, and I'm the sole proprietor of a small business. If I created an S-Corp, would that allow me to stop paying self-employment taxes or FICA? And yes, in part, there's an advantage to forming that S-Corp, Jonathan. You would only pay FICA payroll taxes, both the employer and the employee, because you're self-employed, but you would only do that on your employment wages. The rest of the business profits would not be subject to FICA taxes, only income tax. And so that could be a great opportunity for you to have some of the protections of an S-Corp. Everything flows through to you. And as long as you're paying yourself that reasonable salary, that would not be, or the portion that's beyond that, I should say, that's coming out as profits or what's often considered dividends to you beyond your salary, that portion in particular would not be subject to the FICA taxes. So there is some benefit there. By the way, for those of you who are sole proprietors, make sure that you are getting with an attorney or a CPA to get all of this set up, get your books in place so you're doing everything properly in terms of filing each year. All right, we're going to dive into the phone calls we've lined up today. We'll begin in Texas. Hi, Matthew. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. I just have a question about the national debt being around $35 trillion. What happens? What are the possible scenarios for that debt as far as it being called in?
Yeah, you know, it's more of a slow leak problem, Matthew, than I think anything that would precipitate any kind of crash. I mean, is it a problem? Absolutely. I mean, we're north of 125% of GDP. That historically, you know, is where you're starting to get problematic. We can weather that a little better than others just because of the size and strength of our economy. But certainly we're in a zone we've never been before. And the problem, the big problem, is the trajectory, just the magnitude with which we're adding new debt because of the massive deficits we're running. So that's a big issue that we need to consider, because these principles we talk about on this program apply to nations in addition to individuals. And that is that, you know, if you spend beyond your means, you're going to run up debt, and that debt is problematic. There are clear warnings in Scripture around it. So we're certainly headed in the wrong direction there. And, you know, I think as we look at this, I mean, the implications of that are real because we're about to be in a situation where our largest federal expenditure won't be defense any longer. It will simply be the interest on our national debt. And so what do we need to do about that? Well, we need to vote for leaders who understand that we need to live within our means. We need to vote for leaders who understand a biblical worldview of financial decision-making, that God made us to be productive in His image, that we're more mind than mouth, that humans, that God's creation, we're a blessing, not a curse, and that we were created to be workers. And that productive activity, taking God's creation and improving it and ordering it, is a virtuous cycle that creates economic expansion. And so we need to remove government regulation so we can work. We need to restore a proper view of work that I think we've gotten away from in this country. And we need to, you know, give back to the Lord that created us. And that virtuous cycle is what God intended. Now, with regard to the debt, what are, you know, the possible scenarios? Well, what's most likely to happen is something similar to what we saw happen in Europe in, you know, 2012 to 2015, which was a debt crisis. That wouldn't result in us losing automatically our reserve status, even the de facto reserve status. It wouldn't, I don't think, result in any kind of economic collapse. It's something we could weather. It would be a wake-up call of sorts. It would result in, you know, the Federal Reserve stepping in to create liquidity. It would result in probably higher inflation, which is already a problem, and so that's concerning. And it would result in some pretty serious conversation about strict budgetary constraints. The problem is, you know, we're not in a recession right now, although we could have one later this year. But the fact that even during these years of growth in our economy, we've been adding huge amounts to our national debt. So you can imagine what would happen in a time of recession. And so it's going to require that we have some folks that would get serious about it. It would result in a slower growth environment. It would result in high inflation. It would result in us losing a little bit of our standing on the world stage with regard to how trusted we are. But what we would have going for us, we do today and we would then as well, is the fact that, you know, there's really not any other viable alternatives in the rearview mirror. I mean, you've never had a world reserve currency by an authoritarian dictator. You know, you've got to be able to be trusted on the global stage. And that's not the case with China. That's not the case with Russia. Europe, you know, has had its own problems. Japan has big problems with regard to, you know, their own growth. India is probably the next big one on the world stage. But, you know, they've got some challenges as well, just in terms of, you know, having open a currency that can be used globally for transactions. So, you know, I think we could weather that, but it wouldn't be good. And we've got to get a handle on this. And we need more elected leaders talking about strict budgetary constraints, living within our means, making some hard decisions in order to right-size this. But I don't think we're headed for kind of a cliff that a lot of folks are talking about with regard to some sort of economic collapse. There would be real implications, but you know, we could make our way through it. Does that all make sense, though?
Yes, sir. I appreciate what you do and your answers. I just know that the interest alone, I think, is $1 trillion every 100 days. So I might have that figure wrong, but you know, it just got me thinking about, you know, what if somebody calls in the debt like they do with any individual person? You know, can China just step in and say, hey, you owe us all this money, so we're just taking over, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And they would have more to lose almost than we would, because if they demanded repayment, you know, that would hurt their economy as well. They rely on the U.S. So it would be counterproductive, which is why it would basically be impossible to call in all of its U.S. debt. Appreciate the question today, sir. We'll be right back. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. By the way, we're not live today. We're away from the studio, so don't call in, but we have some great questions that we lined up in advance. By the way, this ministry is entirely listener supported. That means we rely on your financial gifts and support to do what we do on the air every day. If you consider a gift, we'd certainly be grateful. Just head to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com, and click the Give button. Thanks in advance. Hey, before we head back to the phones, a couple of thoughts related to mortgages and real estate today that have been in the news as of late. First, Fannie Mae is revising its mortgage rate forecast upwards, now expecting higher rates for a longer period. That's in part due to the fact that for the fifth time just this week, the Federal Reserve has met and left interest rates where they are, not seeing any kind of reduction. The average rate for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage is forecasted to hit 6.4% by the end of this year. That's up 0.5% from earlier predictions, although lower than where we are today. Now, rates are anticipated to remain, and this is unfortunate news, above 6% for the next 2 years. Possibly stabilizing at 6% by the fourth quarter of 2025. And again, I know that's higher than most folks were hoping for. Current trends show the average 30-year fixed rate mortgage at about 6.75%, with a recent history of fluctuating rates. Economists, including Freddie Mac's chief economist, suggest that mortgage rates will likely stay higher for an extended period. Now, the housing market faces ongoing challenges due to high home prices. As you may or may not know, the average price in the U.S. now $400,000. And that's on top of these elevated interest rates. Higher than expected inflation and strong payroll numbers are expected to push mortgage rates higher. Fannie Mae is expecting an increase in market transactions in 2024 compared to last year, despite these high rates. They've lowered, though, its total home sales forecast to just under 5 million homes for 2024 at 4.91, down from 5 million, and to 5.4 million for 2025. So we're still seeing some challenges in the housing market, no doubt. And ultimately, that means challenges for you, I realize, especially because so many people have tried to hold off from certainly refinancing, but also buying and selling. They're waiting for these interest rates to come down. If, in fact, they're going to stay higher for longer, that's obviously going to create challenges as well. Now, we've had some major changes announced in the real estate space, particularly related to real estate commissions on property sales. I'll weigh in on that in just a moment. Obviously, a lot of folks talking about that. But let's head back to the phones. Let's go to Michigan. Hi, Mike. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I had a question about the U.S. debt repayment and the overwhelming interest that we have. Why couldn't the United States Treasury, instead of using a Federal Reserve currency, why couldn't the United States Treasury just pay off the interest that's out there and then we would be free from it?
Yeah, that would just require that we'd print a lot more money, which would massively expand the balance sheet, which would result in high inflation because you'd have too much money chasing too few goods. And so that would drive prices up, which would be just a major problem. And we've already seen a hint of that this year with 9% inflation. You're experiencing that every day when you go to the grocery store and you're paying, 20 to 25% more than you were a couple of years ago. We're seeing that in insurance premiums. We're seeing it in car prices. I mean, things are up across the board. And so if we were to essentially devalue our currency by massively expanding our balance sheet, essentially putting more money into circulation to pay off the debt, then that would result in high inflation. And so that's why there's fiscal policy, monetary policy that controls all of that. The big answer to all of this is twofold. It's budgetary constraints, meaning living within our means, actually spending a whole lot less at the federal level so that we can, live within the resources that we have as a nation and not run these massive deficits. And then alongside that, pro-growth policies, removing regulations, keeping taxes low, getting out of the way of the small business owner, and, you know, getting back to just the ingenuity and the opportunity of the American worker. And if we return to a kind of a work ethic that I think we see in God's word, God is the ultimate worker. We were created in his image. We were created to be productive. Those two things, the work ethic, having babies, procreation, being fruitful and multiplying, as the Bible said, and alongside that, pro-growth policies, with the freedom to grow businesses in this country without the government stepping in and taxation and regulation that can squelch that, on top of, a commitment, an absolute commitment to living within our means as a nation. Those are the keys to getting out from this, not, printing more money that would be massively inflationary and lead to lower growth. So that's unfortunately, there's not a quick fix to this. It's going to take some hard decisions. We can do it. Question is, are we going to elect leaders that will be willing to make those hard decisions? Mike, appreciate your question, though, sir. Appreciate you being on the program. Let's go to Indiana. Hi, Hank. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Rob. I appreciate the program. And my question was, I got into an annuity. I don't know if it's a variable or what. It was supposed to be kind of like life insurance, but it also had income protection on that.
Okay.
And the investment hasn't grown a bit in 8-9 years, but that income protection plan has grown 8% every year.
Okay. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It sure does. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about that. This is an income annuity, and we can talk about what that means and how that works. I've got to take a quick break, though, Hank. You stay right there, and just on the other side, we'll come back to you and see if we can help you think through this. Well, folks, before we head to this break, let me remind you, if you haven't checked out faithfi.com, that's faithfi.com, I'd love for you to do that. You'll find the best content in biblical finance there. You'll find our community and the money management system. It's all there at faithfi.com. Now, again, a reminder, we're not here today, but more of your questions that we lined up after the break. Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance Live. I'm Rob West, but our team is not here today. That's right. We're pre-recorded, so don't call in, but we did line up some questions in advance just for you. We will get to those in just a moment. By the way, there is another way for you to participate in the program, and that's for you to send us a question electronically. We try to answer those on the air as often as we can. Just go to moodyradio.org/finance and you can submit your question. Let me also remind you, we have a brand new study that we've just come out with. It's our first in the FaithFi study series. We've produced the very first one called Rich Toward God. It's a 4-week look at the parable of the rich fool in Luke 12. It starts out with a question being asked to Jesus. He's actually being asked to be an arbitrator of an inheritance dispute. But as Jesus often does, he turns it upside down and really focuses on the heart issues. And this powerful parable about the rich fool ends with this really provocative statement about being rich toward God. What does that mean? Well, we help you unpack that in this 4-week deep dive into Scripture. It'd be great for your small group at church or in your neighborhood. Check it out today, and you can order your copy. It's beautifully designed, and it's available at faithfi.com. Just click shop. That's faithfi.com, and you can order our brand new Rich Toward God study guide today at faithfi.com. Now, before the break, we were talking to Hank in Indiana. He's got an annuity. He put $13,000 in. The investment isn't growing. He's seeing that the income protection portion is growing by 8% a year. He's wondering if he should get out. And Hank, when you look at annuities, and they have a whole host of names based on the benefits and the issuing companies, but at their core, they're best understood by their timeline. They're either immediate or deferred. And then whether or not they include market exposure. So they're either fixed or variable. So an immediate annuity lets you immediately turn a lump sum of money into a guaranteed stream of income. That's not what you have because you put the money in. You're not drawing the income yet. So you have a deferred income annuity, which is usually where you make a lump sum payment or a series of payments, and your money grows until you're ready to start receiving the income. Within the deferred category, there's either fixed annuities that grow at a guaranteed rate for a period of time, or a variable deferred annuity, which are those where the investments are in underlying portfolios of mutual funds, and they offer you a portion of the upside and they limit the downside. So you've got this deferred income annuity, and what you're saying is the cash portion that you can withdraw isn't growing, but what they're calling the income protection plan is growing by 8% a year, which just means that once you convert that to an income stream, the longer you leave that money there, the more income you're going to get on a monthly basis throughout the rest of your life, or your life plus a spouse. And so that portion's growing. You're not able to withdraw that out, but it is going to increase what's ultimately paid out to you in the form of an income stream, which is usually the ultimate goal of someone who's bought an annuity. Does that make sense?
It does. What would happen if I died? Would the beneficiary get the income, or would they just get the investment?
Yeah. So are you married?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So with some, I mean, it depends on whether you have the payments going or not. You know, generally the payments end with the death of the annuity's owner, called the annuitants. Others, you know, provide for the payments to be made to a spouse or other beneficiary for years afterwards. And so all of that is spelled out in the contract when it's drawn up. And so you would need to look at that just to understand whether you can choose, you know, one or more individuals or charities as beneficiaries for the policy for anything that's remaining in the cash value of the policy. But, you know, typically it goes away either at the end of your life or your life plus your spouse.
Okay. So, but the spouse would get the, like, I've got like 26,000 income in there. So she would get that 26, not the 13.
Yeah, that would typically be the case, that you would name that beneficiary, and your beneficiary would, in this case, your spouse, get payments up to the amount you initially paid for the annuity, and or a portion of what had accumulated in the cash portion of this account, for sure. But again, they're not all created equal. There's a lot of fine print there. And so I think this is a great question for you to ask the company that sold you the annuity.
Right. And then and so the scenario is that I can put more money in there then, right? Anytime?
Yes. You should be able to continue to contribute to it over time. You know, remember there's, you know, the lump sum of money going in, or you can put it over, you know, a scheduled payments going in as well. And usually as you continue to add to it, obviously that's going to increase what would be available to you down the road.
Okay. One more question and I'll let you go, Rob. I appreciate
sure.
it. Okay. So since I figured that I'm getting 8% from that income protection every year, it sounds like I'm in a fixed annuity,
yeah.
right?
It does okay. sound like that. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sir.
You're welcome, Hank. Thanks for being on the program. Call anytime. You know, I mentioned a moment ago that there's been some news out as of late, specifically related to the real estate market, having to do with the way commissions are paid out. You've probably seen something on this topic, just as you've been looking at the news as of late. And it's coming out of the National Association of Realtors. We're seeing this this news coming out. A lot of folks just wondering what it means. Well, here's kind of the bottom line. They're dropping their requirement for their 6% commissions on property sales. So the backstory here is that for nearly a century, the National Association of Realtors has mandated that listing brokers split that 6% commission with buyers brokers. They were sued, though, the National Association of Realtors, in federal court on the grounds that that mandated 6% commission amounted to collusion that artificially raised real estate prices, and a jury awarded about a $2 billion-dollar judgment, one three-quarters billion dollars. And as a part of that settlement, the NAR agreed to drop the commission requirement. And so home buyers and sellers will now have to agree on commissions in writing with their agents. I would say it's probably they're making a little bit bigger deal out of it in the headlines than in reality, because in reality, that that commission has always been subject to negotiation. Now, one of the big changes is that under that longstanding system, homeowners listing their property were generally liable for both the seller and buyer commissions. So they would sign a contract specifying the percentage of the commission split. Traditionally, each party would take 3%. Well, this is a move toward new standards, which gives all parties more transparency and negotiating power, which could eventually lead to lower transaction fees. And it brings us more in line with the rest of the world. You know, in the rest of the world, a commission to sell a property is usually around, on average, 2 to 3% in total, you know, not the nearly 6%, about 5.5% that, you know, we've had here in the U.S. So I wouldn't expect home prices to drop. And let me just say very clearly, I sincerely value the role of the real estate professional in this process. They play an enormous role in contracts and negotiations and protecting you during showings, and they deserve to be paid for that. But I think this, just as a part of fees coming down across the board in a whole host of industries, is going to result in lower fees for realtors. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance Live. Here in our final segment of the broadcast today, let me remind you, our team is not here, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions in advance. We'll get to those in just a moment. Before we do, let me remind you, if you haven't downloaded the FaithFi app, we'd love for you to check it out. It's got three sections in it. The first is the money management system based on Larry Burkett's digital envelope system. It helps you manage God's money in a way where you know exactly what's left in each envelope at any point during the month. There's also our Learn tab, where you can access the best content in biblical finance, and our community, where you can post questions, get comments and ideas from other stewards on the journey. So download it today on our website, faithfi.com. Just click app. Hey, before we take a few more phone calls to round out the program, just one final word on what I was sharing a moment ago. The National Association of Realtors is denying any wrongdoing. They essentially say they settled to avoid harming their members and their businesses, and all of this awaits approval from a federal judge. But I think the bottom line is, you know, although we're going to see changes, we've seen fee compression in other areas of the economy, certainly in the financial space with fees coming down for advisors and with investment products, I think we're going to see some fee compression in the real estate professional space. But again, I sincerely value the role of the realtor. You know, for most of us, this is the largest transaction that we will have, buying and selling a home. You know, having someone who can walk alongside us, contracts, negotiations, you know, you're inviting strangers into your home, somebody to be there as a part of that process, somebody to make sure that inspections are completed properly. I mean, there is a lot that goes into this, not to mention the marketing of your property and even locating that property for you to buy if you are a buyer. But I think the net result of this is more transparency, a little bit more negotiation, and probably overall just fees that are on the average lower than what we're seeing today. So we'll certainly watch this all play out, but wanted to bring you up to speed because you're no doubt seeing some of the information out there about this ruling and wondering what it means for home prices. All right, we're going to head back to the phones. Let's go back to Texas. Bob, go ahead, sir.
I appreciate your help. I'm a retired person from the government.
Yes.
And I retired on a disability retirement in 1996. 18 years ago, I came to the cutoff date of my taxes being withheld from my retirement. And they and IRS has continued to keep my withholding taxes amount. Accumulated right now, it appears to me that it's $24,930. And I can't get the IRS or the Office of Personnel Management to help me with getting this money returned to me. And it says in the Office of Personnel Management website that I can get it from them, but they're not helpful in any way. They just refuse to. And then to compound this problem, I had a stroke in 2021. And so I'm struggling with some cognitive abilities. But yes. I'm taking notes. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. And I'm so sorry to hear about that. Certainly ask our community to be praying for you and in what you're dealing with. Let me ask you, were these Social Security disability benefits or what is it that you were receiving?
Office of Personnel Management, a disability retirement because of a serious on-the-job injury. And since 1996, I have been getting probably in the neighborhood of it started out like $1,200 a month, and now it's up to like $2,000 a month. And it did include, you know, some for my medical insurance and stuff like that, which was helpful. But now I'm looking at all my W-2s or 1099-Rs and whatever, and it shows that they're still consistently taking withholding, let's say, for this year, 2023, $1,384 every year. And they've done this for, you know, for a very long time. And at the age of 54, I was supposed to begin to get tax-free from that retirement. And now I'm 72.
Yeah. Well, and you've obviously been filing returns all along the way. And I mean, that should highlight the overpayment if you didn't owe the taxes and then you could get it back as a refund. Has that been happening?
No, they never give me refunds. They'll give me like a token. It's like, oh, here's $58. I have one check here that probably the most recent, and it's $16.
Yeah, but what is the, I mean, if you're filing tax returns every year and you're showing the total amount that was withheld and paid to the IRS versus what your actual tax liability is, I suspect there's a lot more being withheld than you actually owe. And so that refund is very clear on the return and then would be, you know, coming back to you unless the IRS challenges it. Have you been filing returns every year along the way?
Right. I've missed because of the stroke. I haven't filed for 2022 or 2023. I've been very, very, very confused for that amount of time. And now I'm just basically getting my cognitive abilities in order.
Yeah, well, I can certainly understand that. The good news is, Bob, you're still absolutely entitled to those refunds if you go ahead and file, and I can understand why during that season you were unable to do that. And so I think seeking some professional help would be really essential, somebody who can represent you, review your case, make sure you get in compliance by preparing the returns for those years you haven't filed, and then using that as a mechanism to get back anything that you know is owed to you because of excess withholding for taxes that you don't owe. So I think that's perhaps your next step. And then obviously that person could advise you on the best way to hopefully get that adjustment taken care of moving forward so that we can rectify this in future years and you don't have to wait to file to get it back, but you can actually increase the amount of income coming your way every month, which obviously is what you need to be able to put that into your budget. Do you have a CPA, Bob, that you've used in the past?
No, I'm looking for maybe something in your circle of people would be helpful for this, because each CPA that I talk to, they go like, wow, I don't know what, you know, and I'm sitting there going like, okay, they're the wrong person. So if you know someone, let me know.
Here's what I would do is I would reach out to a certified Kingdom advisor there in Texas and just ask for a referral to a godly CPA. They will all have at least one, if not multiple CPAs that they work with and that they actively refer to for their clients that need that kind of assistance. And that's the best kind of referral because, you know, they're going to know whether this person is somebody who can be trusted and that, you know, if they're going to make referrals from their clients to a CPA, it's, you know, most certainly going to be somebody that will be very good at what they do and probably serve you really well. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a part of their referral network. So I would just go to our website, if you're comfortable doing that, faithfi.com, faithfi.com. Click Find a Professional and then search for a CKA there in Texas using your zip code. And then just reach out, say, listen, I listened to Faith and Finance. Rob said to call you and you could get me connected with a godly CPA. I think that would be the next step, Bob, because you need somebody to walk alongside you, to look at all of your documentation, to get your filing up to date from those years you didn't, help you get those refunds, and then correct the situation moving forward. And having somebody to do that with you, especially just given the uncertainties you have and even some of the fallout of the stroke, I think, you know, would be certainly worthwhile. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll do that.
Okay, Bob. And check back with us if we can help in any way or there's anything along the way that's confusing to you. And we appreciate you being on the program, sir. May the Lord bless you. Well, folks, we're getting near the end of the program today. You know, as I think about just the importance of managing money God's way, it's important that we go back to God's Word all the time and really just consider what the Lord has for us as we think about the opportunity we have to manage God's money. And it really starts with this idea that God owns it all, that God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Therefore, we're stewards. But then we have to move into the day-to-day practices of managing God's money. And that a great place to start is with cash flow and living expenses. I mean, the bedrock to our money management is spending less than we earn. Reducing living expenses is often the quickest way to do that. And we need to find contentment in that and live within God's provision. The Apostle Paul was very clear when he said, I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. I know how to abound in any and every circumstance. I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance, and need. And then right beyond that is making sure we avoid the use of debt, recognizing the rich rule over the poor, the borrower is slave of the lender. And so borrowing always presumes upon the future, which is why we should only do it when there's no better alternative, with spousal unity and where the economic return is greater than the economic cost. And then we move right from there into growing God's money appropriately and saving for the future, training our kids, working diligently. And I think when we put those practices in place alongside giving generously, which calibrates our hearts to the Father's, at least we'd put ourselves in a position to experience God's best. It doesn't mean we'll be free from trouble. I mean, we live in a fallen world. We will have trials and tribulations despite our efforts, but we've done our part. And then ultimately we trust God for the rest. He is our provider, not the U.S. government, not your employer, no one else. Here's my hope and prayer for you that you would be able to lean into that. See, God is your ultimate treasure. Manage money according to God's wisdom in the Bible and give generously to those in need around you. Hey, I'm so thankful you joined us today. We covered a lot of ground today, but let me also say thanks to my team today. I certainly couldn't do this without them. Faith and Finance Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and Faith 5. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next time on Faith and Finance Live.